Welcome to the Fit Vegan Body Podcast with your host, Aaron Cattell, the vegan coach. The point of this podcast is to give you an in-depth but practical approach when it comes to losing weight, being healthy, or gaining muscle on a vegan or plant-based diet. We will have guests every single week to help clear up any confusion and make sure that you are 100% confident in your choice of your lifestyle.
Hey guys, welcome to another podcast, Fit Vegan Body Podcast. I'm here with Nicole from Vegan Beauty Girl. Hey Nicole, how are you?
Hello, I'm feeling good, thank you. How are you doing?
Very good, thanks. For everybody listening, if the connection isn't great, I'm in Bali. Nicole's in London, so it's quite far away. But I think it's really important that we talk to Nicole because she has quite an interesting point of view in terms of usually people that I have on here. More about the health side of being vegan, whereas you are going to be talking to us about the beauty side, which I think for me as a male, I don't really think about because I don't really use beauty products. But for my audience who are mainly female, I think it is a massive part that I haven't really thought about before. So thank you for taking the time to join us.
Oh, not a problem.
And I think the best place to start is find out why and how you became vegan and then obviously decided to kind of go down the beauty route.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, not a problem. So I first went vegan roughly 11 years ago, so back in 2007. And it was very different back then. But it was mostly because I'd been exploring the internet just on my school holidays. And I found out the truth about the milk and egg industry. I was already a vegetarian and firmly against exploiting and killing animals for food, and I hadn't really understood before that milk and eggs led to that. So just overnight I went vegan. My parents were surprisingly very okay with it, and I didn't find it too difficult, if I'm honest. I found that quite easy. But 5 years later, I still hadn't figured out the beauty side of things. So I found that a lot more complicated, really, really confusing. And I think there was a turning point when I just said, oh, I really need to sort out my makeup bag. And by this time, Instagram was a thing. And I thought, there must be someone out there showing me how to do this. But everyone I could find was American, and they had very different products over there to what we had available over here. So I just decided to start my own Instagram page, kind of show my journey. And yeah, I guess it just picked up a lot of other people looking to do the same thing along the way. And I'm just very happy to help everyone out trying to do it, because it can be really confusing. It's not regulated in the same way food is, and there are a lot of different things to think about. So
Okay, cool. So I think it's quite interesting how you said it's not regulated like food is. And I think obviously it can be quite confusing reading food products with all these codes of flavorings and colorings. Is that the same when it comes to additives with makeup as well? Like, look at the back, you're like, okay, it seems like it's okay. But then there's these weird words that do actually mean
what they are. Yeah, it's a completely different thing reading the back of a beauty product. For example, like if you're reading like the back of a food product, it will say suitable for vegetarians. If it's vegetarian, it will put in bold any allergens. Whereas if you're on the back of a beauty product, it's very, very difficult to decipher what is actually in your product. And with a lot of chemical names, a lot of Latin names, there's just a whole broad variety of things that can confuse you. And I think one of the big reasons that vegan beauty has become a lot more popular in the recent years is just because it's been labeled more. People, like companies, are taking the time to have experts go through their products and categorize which ones are vegan and which ones aren't. So years and years ago, you'd really have to like do your research on your phone, then take some notes to Superdrug or Boots and try and find the right products there. Whereas now, at least just has it on the back of a product. You can just go in store and see quite easily what is vegan friendly. And that's, ingredients wise, I think it's quite clear to find vegan products. It's only, I think it's the cruelty free side, which is a lot more harder to establish what is and what isn't.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's almost like, oh yeah, that's a chemical, that's cool. But then is this chemical used to be tested on an animal? And if so, is it for this particular product? Okay, that's quite interesting. And with your own, I mean, you've got the Instagram page. Is that kind of linked to what you do for your day job as well?
Oh, no, not at all, sadly. No, my day job, I work in corporate travel, so it's a very different breadth of work. But no, I really do enjoy doing my Instagram page. It's really exciting. Like every lunch break, I'm pretty much going to Superdrug, Holland & Barrett or Lush, and just seeing what's new on the market and, yeah, just trying to help people out.
Yeah. That's really cool. That's really cool. So I guess your goal then is to quit your travel job and essentially be something vegan beauty wise for the, you know, full-time salary essentially.
Yeah. I'm hoping to develop a bit more on sort of beauty education and campaigns. And I've got a few wild ideas, but I've only just this week gone part-time. So yeah, that's why I'm able to sit here on Tuesday morning and record.
Yeah, that is true. It is 9 a.m. where you are. So that's quite cool. So you're living half the dream, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool. I guess the next thing I wanted to kind of talk about is the brands that still essentially have some of their products tested on animals. Now, I know we talked earlier about how it's banned now in the EU. That you can't test on products. So that is including the UK as well, I assume, even when we do, if Brexit ever happens, I assume that will
stick. Yeah, I doubt that something we'll lose with Brexit. But yeah, so it's been banned in the EU for quite a while now. It's animal testing for cosmetic purposes just isn't allowed here. However, it's compulsory if you want to sell in China. So it becomes quite complicated when you've got brands that sell both in here and in China. It just doesn't really make sense as far as I'm aware, but the loophole that they get around is that these companies, these big companies don't test on animals themselves. They just allow China to test their products on animals before they go out to the shops. And it really frustrates me the fact that these companies are able to sell in both places despite the completely contradictory laws. And it's just very confusing. I feel like knowing that animal testing for cosmetic purposes is banned in the EU, consumers shouldn't have to worry that their products are somewhere in the world being tested on animals. It's a very confusing, contradictory message that consumers are getting. And I think it can be quite misleading. Yeah, that really angers me. I just don't like it when people are trying to make good ethical choices and are unaware of what's really going on and what's wrong with the system.
Yeah. So I know L'Oreal is one of, is that how you pronounce it? I don't even know.
L'Oreal, yeah.
L'Oreal is one of those companies. So then does that mean that in the UK, if you picked up one of their products, it would say that this is not tested on animals? Is that how they still advertise it, or do they avoid that altogether?
So most of the companies that do sell in China will have in their animal testing policies something along the lines of, we do not test on animals, and another line about some research perhaps they're doing into non-animal testing, and then probably a reasonable side spiel, and then they'll end it up with, oh, the one exception is if it's a legal requirement. And so they pretty much say, we don't test on animals, except we will in this situation, which is just, it's very frustrating. And they have a way of wording it that is very confusing to shoppers. And if you weren't aware of what they were trying to conceal, it would be easy to convince yourself that they aren't testing on animals. It sounds like they're just covering their backs, but in reality, it's you know exactly what they're covering their back for. And other companies that choose not to sell in China will actually say in their FAQs, just saying like, oh yes, we are cruelty free, we do not sell in China, we do not test on animals, our suppliers don't test on animals, we don't hand off our products to anyone to test on animals, and they'll be very thorough about it. So it's kind of just looking in FAQs on their cruelty-free policy and ensuring there is no line just saying like, oh, unless it's legally required, or anything of unless or except, or oh, in the rare circumstance. That's always the red flag.
Yeah. Okay. And is there maybe a list that people can look at where there is maybe a resource where they can just actually look up brands that do that and ones that don't, rather than having to read that big kind of terms and conditions?
Yeah. So mostly I'd say that PETA have a great resource, which also lists whether or not the company is fully vegan, whether or not they're partially vegan, whether or not they've got a parent company. So say if you've got a brand that themselves are cruelty-free, but they're owned by a big company like L'Oreal, it'll say in brackets that they're a L'Oreal brand, and then you'd go and search for L'Oreal and see if they test an animal. So the PETA guide is very comprehensive. I don't think they're perfect at a lot of things, but I do like their cruelty-free guide. And then also beyond that, I often, quickest way is just to put in the brand and like say Barry M, and then cruelty-free after that. And there will be, there are a few bloggers out there that will be sharing their news on it. So I recommend Logical Harmony, Cruelty-Free Kitty, Ethical Elephant. I think those three are all very good comprehensive guides. They will really go through what a company's mission statement is and take it apart and clarify at the end whether or not they are cruelty-free and what vegan products they have to offer.
Okay.
So I'd say three big bloggers that people can trust and have been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. And is there, I mean, just off the top of your head, what are some of the big brands that aren't cruelty-free? Just that you, I guess that listeners can be like, oh, that's surprising. Or, I mean, maybe they already know these brands, but what are some that, you know, are still testing on animals, or somewhere down the line, a product of theirs is being tested?
Yeah. Yeah. So mostly it's brands owned by some of the bigger long-standing corporates. So that would be Unilever, L'Oreal, Nestle maybe. And you've got I would say the longest-standing brands. So you've got Estee Lauder, Veet, L'Oreal Benefit, VO5, Tresemme, Nivea, Garnier, Head & Shoulders, Simple. There are tons. It's a lot of the very classic brands that have been on our high streets for years. I think they've got very deep-rooted policies and trade deals that take a long time to change and maybe haven't been so concerned with appealing to a new market that cares about animal ethics. So it would be those sort of brands that I would avoid.
Yeah. Okay. And is China the only country that requires that their products be tested, or are there other, I mean, Asian countries or other countries in the world that have a similar law?
To my knowledge, it is just China. I'm not sure if there's maybe a couple of smaller countries that people don't necessarily, that doesn't have much trade depending on it. But as far as like a big trade player, it would definitely be China. And to the best of my knowledge, it's not any other Asian countries.
Okay. And do you know why the Chinese government feel like they need these products to be tested on animals before they are tested on humans? Because I imagine, you know, you could just take, I don't know, some of the shampoo and put it on a human's hand and see if it is irritable, and if it is, okay, change the recipe. Like, that seems like common sense. That seems like common sense to me. So why do they then feel like they have to do quite abusive practices to, you know, find out the answer?
Yeah, it's hard to say, really. It's very confusing. It is baffling. From what I understand, they are just very skeptical about foreign imports, and they just aren't willing to test it on their humans, and instead it's the animals. It is quite mind-boggling, and I know they have a lot of issues going on in their country right now, and perhaps this isn't at the forefront of their minds, but yeah, it's very, very frustrating. And I do feel like if the big players, if the L'Oreals, the Estee Lauders, the Unilevers, if they took their products out of China, until they change these laws, I think it would be a huge, huge catalyst, and people would suddenly demand this change. So I do think a lot of the responsibility is on their shoulders.
Yeah, I think so as well, because, you know, the fur industry or the fashion industry have made that move of, you know, the big, big brands and the well-known brands have decided not to use fur anymore. So people have had to come up with an alternative. And if those same big companies of the makeup industry did something similar, or just like boycotted China, and then they'd be forced to change that law. Like, if the rest of the world can get by without it, why can't
exactly China? Yeah, it's so confusing, because clearly these products are being used on a global level, and if we're not reacting to it, then that's already a form of human testing that's clearly going quite well.
Yeah, it is interesting. But, you know, the Chinese do have a very different way of living, I suppose, sometimes with the other things. Like, we have, obviously, the Yulin Dog Festival, I suppose, if that's what you want to call it, which is a small part of China. But, you know, it still happens. And the government could step in there as well. But who knows what's going on. Okay, let's step away from the sad, depressing side of things. Is there any... I guess people that you're close with, or friends, or people that you interact with on Instagram and stuff, that kind of are very strong against having, I guess, beauty products that are being tested on animals, but then still decide to eat animal products? Because I feel like that's kind of quite hypocritical. But do you kind of come across people like that?
Yeah, I actually think it's becoming more and more prominent. I think back when I became vegan, I felt like it was always led by the diet, and potentially because that was the easiest way to kind of introduce yourself to the space. But nowadays, that cruelty-free and vegan are becoming a lot more commonplace in beauty marketing, as well as just having a much better variety on their shelves. I think a lot of people are using that as their gateway into veganism, and a lot of people are flirting with cruelty-free beauty products and vegan beauty products before they transition to vegan. I think a lot of people are just kind of dabbling in with it a lot more. I am often quite surprised when people who follow me aren't actually vegan. I have to just readjust my thinking to how people are going into this movement these days, and how a lot more people are dabbling in with it rather than committing themselves overnight. And the numbers are growing. It's obviously working. It's just it's a bit strange for me. It's not what I'm used to. So I am having to adjust my thinking. But yeah, a lot of people are engaging in the cruelty-free side. And also beyond that, I think a lot of people are looking to work with zero waste and low waste methods alongside their beauty as well. I think that's really emerging. And a lot of people are often asking me or calling me out when I'm sharing products which are probably a bit more affordable high street but still vegan and cruelty-free brands. They call out about all the packaging and the plastic, and I think that's really interesting to see that there is a bit of a shift on the environmental impact of the beauty industry, and there are definitely huge problems with that. And there are you can still buy vegan beauty and be harming the environment, and there are a lot of options out there which are a lot more low waste and low packaging. So it's interesting to see this sort of area of beauty finally develop, where brands are caring about being vegan, being cruelty-free, reducing their packaging, maybe going carbon neutral, refill options. It's a really exciting time for the beauty industry.
If only I was part of it, eh? So, I mean, do you think, like, going back to the people that you interact with that you know, choosing cruelty-free options but still eating animal products, do you think they do that because a little bit of them feels like it's too much to give up eating animals, but they still want to, like, kind of put their mind at ease that they're doing something good? Because I think there are a lot of, you know, there's people that I talk to that don't go vegan, but they still don't want to use plastic straws or don't use plastic bags at the shopping center. And I'm just like, if you really want to make a big impact towards the environment, then maybe you should look at your diet as well. Like, do you think that's just them justifying their decision? Or do you think it's, like what you said, a process of them, okay, I'll dabble in this and then maybe I'll change my diet?
Yeah, I do. I hope it is a process. I know some people can take quite a while, and particularly some of my close family and friends that I've had for years. They follow me on Instagram now. I think mostly out of politeness to begin with, but they've seen themselves starting to just subtly make these choices in their life where they've never really cared much before, but now that they're seeing it every day on my Instagram, they're thinking like, oh, I might go for this option instead. And I think that's really interesting, and hopefully I think we do see it mirrored with food choices, but not as a cold hard commitment. I think some people are now saying, oh, do you know what, I'm actually going to order the veggie burger, I've heard that this is really great, whereas beforehand no one would ever have done that. No one would have ever gone to a restaurant and ordered a veggie burger. No one would have ever have thought, oh, get that vegan mascara instead, because it just used to be so associated with poor quality, and it was so frustrating for so many years. And we've really seen a shift in what people think of when they see the word vegan. They don't think bad quality. They don't think hippie. They think, oh, healthy, oh, environmentally friendly. And it's great that it's changing. And I think, you know, in everyday life, people aren't always committing to being 100% vegan, but I think they are picking up daily habits which are more vegan friendly. So they'll be switching out their milk for their oat milk. And yeah, I do hope it is a process, because it's not necessarily enough the stage we're at now, but it's moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I think that's good to hear. As long as people get to that end point that we all want. Because I think personally for Emily, my girlfriend, she avoided the animal products first by not eating them, and then cutting out, you know, her beauty products and being more mindful that way. Because I think, I mean, for me, maybe I'm just an ignorant male, but you don't even think about, oh, maybe the shampoo was tested on an animal. You're like, you don't even think about that, because it is kind of that next step. Or that next deeper thinking, because, you know, this is not an animal that I'm eating. That makes sense. That's logical. But then you're like, the next level is, okay, maybe this was, you know, tested and harmed an animal. It's kind of like the vegan rabbit hole. You know, once you start thinking like a vegan, you tend to find so many things that you didn't even think about before. On that, do you think, apart from, you know, like you said, the environmental friendly and the vegan cruelty thing, are there any other emerging trends that are kind of coming through in the beauty industry, like maybe not even related to the animal or environmental thing?
Like you said earlier, there's definitely the environmental sort of, what plastic are we using? Should we be using glass instead? Can we do refills? I find that that's definitely emerging in the beauty space. And hopefully we're going to see a rise on multi-use products as well, because I probably got a lot of products than the average person, but I think a lot of us are over purchasing beauty products. And I know that fast fashion's been called into account a lot lately, and I think hopefully it's going to be time for fast beauty to be called in and slashed away, really, because there are always these new hot trends. Like, for example, sheet masks have just kind of hit the mainstream lately, and it's, instead of using, say, a tub of face mask which you can apply every now and again, you're instead using one sheet which comes in plastic packaging each time you want to use a face mask. And I'm not really understanding this trend. It sounds like it's just not very eco-friendly, and it's not very affordable either, having to buy something new each time. And it's frustrating when trends just come in and come and go just so fast. So hopefully we kind of call these for what they are, and that they're just fads and latest innovation in beauty. They're just a fad that is trying to be pushed down our throats and sold straight to us. So yeah, I'm hoping that'll be next.
Okay, that sounds good. I was just having a think about shellac. I was so surprised when I found out what shellac was and where it was deprived from. Is there any other products that people probably don't know come from an animal or an insect or something like that, kind of along the lines of shellac? Because that's like crushed up beetles, right?
Yeah. Yeah, And it's not only used for like glossing up nails, but you can also find that on fruits as well, which really drives me crazy. So shiny oranges and lemons will often be glossed with shellac, which is just absolutely balmy as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, another one, which I was actually just talking to my colleagues the other day about, is someone turns around to me and says, oh, did you know that M&Ms aren't vegan? And I thought, well, yeah, they're milk chocolate. But she was telling me that she'd only just found out that they had carmine in them. And that's that deep red food colouring, which comes from a beetle. And have I got that right? Sorry, let me just check. That does come from a beetle.
Wow. And Emily just passed me a note saying that Skittles also have a similar kind of product that makes them shiny that is also derived from beetles. So maybe it's the same kind of shellac kind of thing, which is kind of weird.
This one's a red colouring, which is used, to colour sweets, and then also in lipsticks, blushes, any eyeshadows, and a lot of makeup, which is red. So for ages, I'd always find that those were the products I'd have to avoid. So any eyeshadow palette with red in would typically not be vegan friendly. And then, fortunately, a lot more alternatives coming out on that. And I find that I've seen in the last 3 years a lot more eyeshadow palettes become vegan, which was quite a relief, because beforehand you wouldn't be able to get one and you just have to buy lots of individual eyeshadows, which would cost a fortune. And then I'd say the other most common ingredient to kind of like ruin a vegan cosmetic is beeswax. And other alternatives are emerging and are being used a lot more commonly now. It's very nice to see that people are, it seems like the companies are actively looking to see vegan with one simple switch. So it's really nice to see that this thought does seem to be putting in, because a lot more ranges are coming out these days, like lipsticks are being made about beeswax and eyeshadows being made about carmine. It does seem like there is a very active approach to reviewing the ingredients and whether or not they'd be suitable for vegans before they come to market. It's nice seeing the shift.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, do you deal with, I guess, girls that are so into their makeup that they wouldn't even consider cruelty-free? Like, if most people you speak to open to it, or there are still some closed-minded people that you kind of come across that are kind of like, never do that?
Yeah, there are some people who have spent a long time finding the perfect beauty products for them, and when they find out that these products aren't cruelty-free anymore, it can be very difficult for them to switch. And I've definitely got a few friends who, they want to switch, they do, but they're not willing to compromise on the makeup they're using. They won't just say, okay, well, I'm not going to buy it anymore. They're saying, until I really would like to find something that is identical to this product, but until I do, I'm not gonna switch. And it can be very difficult, because sometimes it's not even that a product's better for you, it's just that it's what you're used to. I personally, I just couldn't prioritize my foundation ahead of this belief, and animal testing is just so wrong, and I just couldn't convince myself to stick with any brand or any product over that belief. But yeah, I do get quite frustrated, and there are a lot of people who do struggle when they've got, it is hard when you found like your perfect foundation or your perfect bronzer or whatever this perfect product is to switch, but I just can't get my head around not switching, no.
I think that's kind of the same.
There's definitely a lot of people like that.
I think that's kind of the same kind of frame of mind though for people that have found the perfect food or perfect recipe or anything like that, and they're like, oh, I really like this meal, I can't comprehend not eating it. But then it's kind of like there is that bigger cause, that bigger picture, and it's personal preference against someone or something else's life or well-being. So I think it's very similar in terms of the diet thing versus the beauty thing, and probably with most things as well, like fur. Oh, I really want to wear fur because it makes me feel good, and it's like, yeah, but that's come from an animal. So
yeah, that's really interesting. I think because I turned vegan at 14, I hadn't really established much of like a lifestyle, or I hadn't really, you know, I didn't have a diet I was following, used loosely, not in like a weight loss way, just a, you know, a routine of foods. I didn't have a like a makeup bag full of products. I was still borrowing from my sister's makeup bag. And yeah, I didn't have much that needed changing. I was just starting from scratch, I suppose. So I guess it is very hard for me to kind of get into the mindset of someone who has established all these habits for years and years and needs to change them.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess thinking of things that I think personally might need to change is the, I suppose the word or the stereotype around, you know, the word vegan. Do you think that that kind of stereotype or the cliche of what a vegan person is has changed in those last few years that you have become vegan? And do you think it is going to hopefully become more of a positive kind of word? Or do you think that plant-based is kind of winning on that front?
Oh, good question. Yeah. I think in London, I think in London and quite a lot of the UK, things are changing, and I think it's changed quite a lot. Like just walking down the street, every food outlet, every Superdrug and every Boots, everywhere is kind of advertising that they're vegan or that they've got a vegan option. It's such a buzzword at the moment, and it is associated with sort of the epitome of goodness. You know, it's healthy, it's ethical, it is really being kind of promoted as that in sort of where I live, at least. And it is great to see that change finally happen and that people are looking at it in a good light. But I am very aware that around the rest of the world, it's still kind of being misunderstood and just seen as something like a little bit crazy, a little bit radical and rather unhealthy. So it's really frustrating to see that that hasn't changed yet. But I think a lot of the big change has happened through, firstly, Instagram, where people can kind of like low-key share their lifestyle instead of shoving it down your throats as people used to think we did. And I think that Veganuary has had a massive impact on kind of challenging people and doing it in January when everyone wants to be a bit healthier, they want to detox, and people are thinking, oh, I'll do vegan for a month, and then they see how great it is and they learn how to cook vegan and they learn how to live vegan and they learn how, yeah, they just learn all these things and find out it's not that hard, and then they stick with it. And I think as long as campaigns like that continue to grow, I think we're kind of onto a winner, like world domination style. But yeah, I think it's only going to improve.
Yeah, and I hope it does. I mean, I think it has. Like, I've lived in London for the last 3 years, and over that time, I've definitely seen more of a positive kind of spin on things. I think we were back in New Zealand 2 months ago. New Zealand still has a way to go when it comes to like options and cafes and restaurants. But yeah, I definitely think it's more accepted. I definitely think there's more options. And I mean, I don't know if you've been to Bali, but every restaurant has got at least 3 to 5 vegan options on the menu. There's so many vegan cafes and plant-based cafes everywhere. It's almost like Bali is leading the world with that kind of thing. And it's so cheap, which is great.
But is it all smoothie bowls out there? Is it all healthy and nothing fresh?
There is definitely smoothie bowls, pretty much like 3 to 5 of them on every meal menu. But there's also like, there's good salads, there's good like Buddha bowls and vegan pancakes, which we had the other day. But yeah, there's lots of, it's almost like all the Australians or all the Californians that have got this concept of what a cool vegan restaurant would be, but don't have the capital to start it in Australia or America or London, come to Bali and then start it to test out the idea. And it, you know, it's working really well. So yeah, it's a great place. And on that note, I think we'll wrap this up. How can people, I guess, learn more about you, follow you? I guess, yeah, like what's your Instagram handles? Is that the best way to contact you? And I guess, yeah.
Yeah. I'd say, yeah, if anyone's interested in learning a bit more about vegan beauty and just seeing what there actually is out there, what's on the high street, what's online, then give me a follow over at Vegan Beauty Girl. I also sometimes expose companies that I don't like, and that greenwash or vegan wash is a new term I've come across, which I think is quite a cool term. But yeah, if you give me a follow at Vegan Beauty Girl, and yeah, slide into my DMs if you need any help on anything. I'm always happy to help. I don't have the fastest response times, but I'm always happy to help.
Okay, I'm more interested in hearing about these companies that you don't like. Can you name your bottom three, the ones you dislike the most?
Oh, definitely L'Oreal's down there. Yeah, no, it would be L'Oreal, Unilever, and Estee Lauder. 100%, yeah.
Right. And one more question while I've got you. Although most of my audience are female, is there any male products, I suppose, are male products turning more vegan? Do you know? Like, are they, like the shaving creams and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I definitely would say there are quite a lot of them. I think a lot of male products started out, a lot of companies started out of like beard oils and then grew from there. But there are quite a few. But I'd also say just everyday essentials like toothpaste and deodorant and shampoo, conditioner, all of those things, you know, they're thinking about. And yeah, there are a lot of retailers out there that are starting to do stuff. Over here in the UK, you can always find anything in Superdrug. It's just such a nice place, which it's a retailer that's very affordable, it's on every high street, and labels all their products as vegan. So that's incredible. And they've got a good men's range there as well.
Amazing. All right, cool. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me. It's been, I guess, eye-opening to say the least, because of course this is something that I don't really talk about, and hopefully it wasn't too weird talking about makeup with a male.
No, it was great. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, I hope it wasn't, too makeup-y.
It's all right. I'm sure people will appreciate it.
Brilliant.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you too.
And that's all for today, guys. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Of course, we'll see you next week. If you have questions or want to find out more information about working with me, check out my Instagram at thevegan_coach, my website, thevegancoach.org, or just check out my Facebook page. Have a great day and see you next week.